June 1st, everybody. Yes, indeedy, it is June 1st, 2020. My name's Larry Jacob. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and I have two Buckeyes on the line today. I've got our good friend Charlie Wilson. Charlie is the president of the National School Boards Association. He's also a law professor at Ohio State, teaching education law and international education law and policy at their Moritz College of Law. And in his spare time, he's also a school board member in Worthington City Schools in Worthington, Ohio. So Charlie's with us. He's been on with us a good number of times. I love having him on. And this time, he has brought with him Dr. Trent Bowers, who is the superintendent over in Worthington, Ohio. So, Trent, I'll welcome you in person in just a second. Charlie, welcome back. I'll say that to you in just a minute when I bring you both online. We're going to talk about how Worthington, Ohio, which is typical of many, many school districts, is handling the challenges and opportunities that are facing us these days. And of course, this is the first show after a terrible week, really in American history, but certainly in modern American history. Mr. Floyd was killed in Minneapolis, which touched off all those terrible riots. And so many protests and so many good protesters went out there. And of course, some people unfortunately got carried away and they were rioting and looting and all that sort of thing. It's not typical of what's going on out there, but this is the world we live in. And we have to teach kids. When kids are involved, you know, we have to teach them now. And we're not there to be touchy-feely about it because all the schools are closed. And it adds another layer to this incredible challenge of teaching remotely during the pandemic. And as I mentioned to my wife, these protests, while they were certainly legitimate, the people are putting themselves at risk because there is a pandemic out there. There is a terrible virus, and they're all getting close and, you know, together on the streets. It's really scary stuff, and we have to somehow talk about this to our kids. All right, and we'll ask Dr. Bowers how he's thinking about handling this. I'm sure he has a wonderful teacher there, and I'm sure they've talked about it. But we'll bring them on in just a second. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. That's education-talkradio.org. That's our website. We put a new schedule up there on Saturdays. You can follow us on Twitter at EduTalkRadio. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Larry Jacobs. That's me. And on Facebook at both EduTalkRadio and Larry Jacobs. Our other website, that has so much to do with these crazy events still ongoing, is all about equity and access in schools. It's called, the website is ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. And ace-ed.org is an acronym now, ace-ed, the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed. So go over to ace-ed.org. Our official journal, ACNE, is over there. Join our consortium. It's free. We want your voice to be heard. It's for educators and people involved in education. All right? And we're putting together a new issue of the magazine that'll be on site probably the week of June 15th. And we really want your voice out there. So please join with us, ace-ed.org. Again, everything over there is free. We're not trying to charge or anything like that to get your voice heard. So please join in with us, ace-ed.org. Okay, let me bring on my two Buckeye guests here. There we go. There we go. Okay. Let me say hello to Charlie first. Hello, Charlie Wilson.
It's Larry. Hello, Larry. It's an honor to be on your show, the best on talk radio show on education. Thank you very much for inviting me again.
I have bowed my head. Thank you so much. And I'll say thank you so much not only for the compliment, but obviously for your I say in all modestly, for your excellent taste in podcasting. Thank you, Charlie. That was a joke. See, because you're giving me this incredible compliment. Thank you, my friend. Cool stuff. All right. Trent, are you there?
I'm here, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Trent, it is my pleasure to have you here. Okay, and I'm going to start right there. Charlie's president of the National School Boards Association. We're going to get into that. But, Trent, describe Worthington, Ohio, the demographics of the schools, what the district looks like, that sort of stuff.
Sure. So we are an inner-rung suburb of Columbus, Ohio. We serve 10,600 students, preschool through 12th grade. We have about 63% of our students are Caucasian students. As we talk about this weekend and the events of this weekend, 2,000 of our students are Black or qualify as multiracial, and certainly our hearts go out to our families and our students and our teachers, you know, that are really struggling with the recent events and trust and, you know, a number of pieces. And so Worthington serves a community of 62,000 residents. We have two traditional high schools, an alternative high school, 11 elementary schools, four middle schools, and really are, a diverse community of learners. About 750 of our students are students who come from a different language other than English.
23%
of our students qualify for free and reduced priced meals through the federal free lunch program. And so Worthington, I think, is a slice of America and a little bit of everything. Everybody's here.
Sounds like it is. It sounds like it is. How long have you been superintendent, Trent?
So I have been the superintendent. This is the end of my fifth school year as superintendent.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
Okay, where were you before this, or have you been in Worthington?
Well, this
all
is
time?
My first superintendency. So I
congrats.
grew up in Worthington. I was graduated from Worthington High School, and I was a teacher in Worthington, a principal in another district for a little while to get some experience, and then Worthington allowed me to come home, and I ran human resources here in Worthington, was the assistant superintendent, and then was able to become the superintendent here in Worthington Schools.
Well, congratulations. What a nice trajectory of a career. But this brings up a challenge for you. You're a graduate of Worthington High School, but you now have two high schools in the district. Are you favoring Worthington? We have to ask this question.
So we have a Thomas Worthington High School and a Worthington Kilbourne High School. Was Worthington High School at the time before we added a second high school. And Dr. Wilson was very instrumental in that process years and years ago. That second high school coming on board.
Nice.
And I tell people I lived on the Worthington Kilbourne side, so that's where I would have gone, but that high school didn't exist at the time, but that's where I grew up and my sister graduated from school. And but I do have kids now in the district that are at Thomas Worthington High School. So no favorites. We wear the Worthington banner, but we are a two high school district.
And I'm sure they play each other in football or whatever sports, and I hope that the superintendent, just like the president always does at the Army-Navy game, walks to the other side of the stands at halftime. I'm just going to leave it at that. That's all that has
perfect.
To happen.
Absolutely.
Just a thought. Just a thought. Charlie, congratulations on bringing about that second high school, man. How long have you been on the school board there, Charlie?
I've been on the school board since 2007, but as a parent who lived on the Worthy-Kilbourne side, I was on lots of community and parent committees, both planning the enormous growth we were experiencing and the building of the new Worthy-Kilbourne High School back in the late 1980s and the early 1990s.
And who'd have thunk it from then? Now from then till now, when you're president of NSBA nationally, amazing! Another amazing trajectory, Charlie. Especially with your background in education law, it's just amazing. Yes.
Thank you,
Charlie.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I didn't hear you. I didn't hear you say that. You had a little more to say on that. Okay. Scary times out there, gentlemen. And I just want to ask you. I mean, Trent. Obviously, you've got I'm sure you have great teachers and staff and all that sort of thing. They're in a bind anyway. If the last week's events hadn't happened, it's tough enough out there. What do you think is going to happen this week as you work remotely? And I know that one of your mantras, and Charlie wrote me this, Trent, is, quote, be kind to kids. And then he wrote me, and he says, that's all you need to know about Trent Bowers. Be kind to kids, okay? And he means that. When Charlie doesn't mince words, he means that 100%. And, you know, it's a tough week to teach kindness. And, well, what are you telling your educators out there, or what are they telling you? Either way, just with all the things that are going on right now, Trent.
So we have six expectations in Worthington Schools, and the first and the sixth is be kind to kids. And it's first and last because it's the most important thing. Mm. And kindness isn't enough. Like it's the statement is written so that it pops into our heads and we remember it and it sticks with us when we need it most. But we don't think kindness is enough. It's really about building deep relationships with kids. We think all learning mm-hmm. comes through relationship. And those relationships and that trust and the idea that every student in Worthington Schools is going to have trusted adult that they know loves them and cares about them is critical. And we have 1,300 staff members in the school district. We have about 800 teachers.
One
of the things important to us is that if you're employed with our school district, you're connecting with kids. So it doesn't matter whether you're a teacher in the classroom or you're in food service or you're a custodian in the building or in the office or a bus driver. Everybody that works in Worthington Schools needs to understand that their first job, their most important job, is to be that trusted adult for our kids. And so I think that's critical. It's both been critical during this pandemic, and it's critical right now that our trusted adults are reaching out to our kids they have relationships with. And I think maybe a bright part of the fact that we've been on remote learning now for 10, 11, 12 weeks that our teachers are used to reaching out to students outside of school. And those structures are in place right now. Our kids know how to contact teachers, and they're not bound by an 8-to-3
nice.
Day. That support is there. I think that's what we're telling our teachers. You know, our teachers are off the clock. We are in summer in Worthington, Ohio. But our teachers are really never off the clock, right? So it's
I didn't realize that as we started this. School is done for the summer?
School is done for us in the summer. We start back August 19th. We have a lot of summer programming going on, obviously, in a school district like ours. But our teachers, you know, again, nobody's really off the clock these days, right? We're connecting with kids, and whether that be through GroupMe apps or through email communication or texting or drive-bys or whatever that piece may be, our job's to connect with kids, and our kids really need that right now.
More than ever now.
Yeah, and you know what I realized this weekend is our staff needs that. And I don't know that I understood that, is how deeply this impacts our Black educators as much as it does our students and our families. And so when I thought about my original communications on Friday, immediately I thought about our students and our families and, you know, what they're going
through. That's where my mind went, too. That's where my mind went as well.
But I've learned in just 3 days, it's impacting our educators as well.
What are you hearing on that? You've obviously gotten some communication from some folks. What have you heard?
Well, I mean, I think
that's great insight, by the way.
So multiple things. So one, our Black educators in Worthington feel this deeply through a lens that I as a white male can't understand. So they see this as a continued injustice. They have experiences that I don't have. And they feel that. And then obviously they feel it as parents raising their own children and the fear that exists and the mistrust that exists. Again, if I were redoing some things from Friday, I would have reached out a little more intentionally to our own educators, not just our students
mm-hmm.
and family.
Sure.
I think
well,
the other piece
that's
is
a great,
all
that's
of
a
our
wonderful
students.
Lesson for all of us. It's a wonderful lesson for all of us. That's all I'm going to say on that.
No. And all of our staff members in Worthington, regardless of whether they're people of color, I think they, you know, because they hopefully are developing a level of empathy and they're understanding things like implicit bias, you feel these events differently. It's not that you just saw it. You see humans as, this could be a student sitting in my classroom. And
that's
when you
right.
know somebody, it's just very different. You know, when you see some, when you really know them, you view them differently.
And it's interesting what you're saying because Charlie's here and he's a member of your school board. And, mm-hmm. You know, the school boards, Charlie, you can chime in on this, and again, nationally or locally. School boards are the voice of the people. Mm-hmm. All right. That's That's what their job is. They represent the people, all right, and then the budget and all that sort of thing. The managerial side is what Trent does, okay? But the people side, what are you hearing, Charlie, just from folks and how they should react school board-wise? Charlie Wilson, president of NSBA and Worthington City Schools School Board member.
I'm hearing two threads of thought. First of all, as we know, aggressive policing is not only a problem within our urban streets, but also a pervasive and chronic issue within the walls of our schools. And the school-to-prison pipeline, very well documented and very well established. And but on the other hand, I believe schools are a central piece of the answer to the puzzle concerning driving social change and advocacy. I am a glass half full person, and I truly believe that if this country was able, in the face of a worldwide pandemic, to shut down and bend that curve without much, if any, leadership at the national level, it was done at the 50 states. I am convinced that 15,000 school districts across America with these 90,000 school board members that you were just referring to, Larry, that we can begin to address and solve the problem of institutional and structural racism that has existed in this country for more than 400 years. I'm optimistic that if we could shut this country down in a month in the face of a pandemic, a worldwide pandemic, that schools can begin to address this whole issue of institutional and structural racism. So I'm optimistic in light of what's happened in recent days and in recent months.
That's good to know. That's good to know. And as the old saw goes, from your lips to God's ears, I hope we are successful. Now, we did manage to close down. I think that's going to be the easy part. The hard part's going to be reopening and protecting everybody, because so many people lost their jobs. And there's an economic challenge out there. And I'm sure that's in Worthington, just like it is here where I live in Maine, southwestern Maine, a little town called Cornish, but it's everywhere across the whole country. So let me ask you this, Charlie, and I'll swing it over to Trent. All right. Obviously, and let's just take this example, you know, like poor Mr. Floyd. Okay. Some people, there's been a lot of this type of thing going on. There's been too many incidents of it. I won't go into those. All right. But they've been in, I think, in Nashville or Louisville, one of those cities. Okay. And of course, that gentleman who was jogging, okay, you know, that wasn't police related. And you have all these other things, you know, all these other ones, Mr. Garner in New York City. Okay. All these things have happened. Okay. And but the school districts, okay, why is it still there? I mean, what can the school districts do? When we're talking about Minneapolis, we're talking about one of the most liberal cities in the entire country, okay? It's a big city, and of course it's got its challenges, as we've learned, but it's one of the more liberal cities, all right? And yet this happened there. What do you think we can do? I'll start with Charlie and give Trent a minute to think about it. Charlie, what can we do? What have we done wrong? I don't know how to ask the question.
Well, we've done two things wrong. Number one, we've ignored way too many instances of racist incidents in our society, and we've ignored the structural and institutional racism in this country. The second thing we've done wrong is to accept the notion that we are now a colorblind society, or we're a post-racial society. We're not, and we never have been. Dr. Bowers just referred to those of us, such as myself, who have lived all my life with the privilege of having white skin, we don't live in a colorblind society. And we are filled, no matter who we are as white people, with implicit bias. And as Dr. Bowers said, our school district has, even before this instance, but it's going to turn up the training of our staff, our teachers, our faculty, about implicit bias, so that we understand this better. But, why don't you turn it over to Dr. Bowers?
Trent?
I was just going to let Charlie keep answering that question. You know, here's what I first, I do need to say at some point in this interview that Dr. Wilson is an incredible advocate for equity for students.
He challenges
me every day in that realm. And challenges
and you
our practices
too,
and our
policies. I am sure, but it's great to be challenged. Yeah, that's great
well,
to be challenged.
Well, yeah, I'd see myself as an advocate as well. But
I'm sure.
You know, when you're constantly challenged and pushed, you become a better advocate.
That's exactly right.
You know, I think Dr. Wilson's right. We've been working through our leadership of our board, and our entire board is incredibly supportive of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so one of the things that we spent all of last school year on was diversity, equity, and inclusion leadership and teams at each of our schools and talking about things like implicit bias. But I always really just go back to in one of those sessions that we had this year, we played a game or an exercise where it was really about who do you spend time with? And what I realized is I have a nephew who's black, but outside of my nephew, I don't spend time personally outside of work with anybody who's of a different color than I am or of a different race.
Mm.
And so I think that's part of our challenge is that we separate and we've and not intentionally separate. You know, I would feel like I have plenty of close acquaintances and people that I work with of color.
People you respect and care for.
People that I respect
exactly
and care for. But not a lot of people that I've spent, you know, consciously spend time just talking through issues with. And so I think we have to bring groups together. I think we have to bring people together. Again, I think when you know somebody and you really, you know, get to know them, then you start to better understand their perspective. And when you do that, it changes everything because you know more and you do better. So I think that's the path forward.
It is, and it's going to be very difficult now for I really believe it. Hopefully, the passion of the moment, so to speak, not the civil rights passion of it, but the emotional anger will dissipate over the course of time. I don't know how to say that the right way, but you know, I want people to still be very, very involved, very careful, and very caring about all this, but you know, not to the point of harmfulness. And hopefully, that will dissipate in a little while. Let me swing back to education for a second. I want to ask you, this is a toughie. We all got stuck the last 8 weeks with kids from school. Let me swing this more back to education. Okay, I didn't realize that your school was already done, Trent. Mm-hmm. The school year was done in Worthington, which allows me to ask a question. How did your teachers, okay, assess the kids' progress? I mean, you had a graduation. Obviously, those kids graduated. Probably most of the kids were promoted. All right. But how did they assess it when all was said and done? Let's get away from the terrible topics of the week and just talk about the education size. Now that school's done, how did they assess the children, A's, B's, C's, however?
Sure. So a couple things. We first of all, our teachers were amazing. We sent them home on Friday. With whatever technology that they had and said, hey, we need to move to remote learning. And at the time, I really didn't understand. I don't think we all understood that we'd be out for the rest of the school year. Maybe we should have in retrospect, but at the time, we didn't. And so we looked at this as really emergency remote learning. So how do we keep learning going for our students as best as we can during an extraordinary period of time? We did in Worthington Schools move to a pass and complete grading scale. We felt like, obviously, when students are home and home unexpectedly and not by choice, that letter grades that may be earned may reflect more the support that they had in the house than actual learning. And we wanted to keep our students learning, so we knew they needed something. Right, so pass allows you to say, hey, I've got to keep doing work. Incomplete meant if you didn't do work, then we're going to work with you all summer to make sure you can do that work so that you can start next school year at a place where you're ready to go, and we wanted to give them that incentive. But, you know, how students were assessed specifically where they are is, I think, something that all schools are going to have to start next school year on. Because, again, it's really hard to get a read through a computer of exactly what students have learned and what they haven't learned, who helped them, who didn't help them, where is their own knowledge, what's the summer learning gap going to look like. We obviously always see some sort of summer slide.
Of course.
We would expect that it's going to be a longer summer slide. So we surveyed all of our teachers.
And we don't even know how we're going to go back next fall.
Yeah.
In your case,
we certainly don't.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we
don't
know
that yet. Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. People have been saying, I've heard this line, that from various superintendents and leaders as I do the show, that we're building the plane as the plane is running down the runway. Okay, you know, with learning about remote learning. And it dawned on me that that's a good analogy. But I was thinking about pilots, and rarely do planes have trouble. They do have trouble. There's an occasional terrible accident, et cetera. Rarely do they have trouble. Okay, they usually just take off and land, and that's pretty much the end of it. Okay, and you know, but those pilots are trained for every possible disaster. 99% of what they know, they'll probably never use because the planes are pretty safe. Okay, and we've learned a good lesson in education, considering we're building this airplane while it's going down the runway. We've got to make sure that our teachers are trained like a pilot is trained. We never thought to train them for remote learning because that never even occurred to us, okay? But if they were an airline pilot, everything that could go wrong that can be saved, okay, is taught to them, all right? How are you going to approach teacher PD? Okay, and Charlie, you're welcome to pop into this one too, but I'll ask Trent first. Knowing what we know now and what could possibly happen in the future, what's the future professional development, professional learning going to look like? Okay, in Worthington, Ohio, and you're a sharp superintendent. Go for it, Trent.
So, first of all, we hope to have kids back in school. We think that school is a social enterprise, and kids learn best with their peers and face to face, and it's important to us. We did learn very quickly that one of the things that our parents asked for and our teachers asked for is a common learning management system for remote learning. We had teachers that were using Google Classroom. We had teachers that were using Schoology. And both of those were fine. And we had some teachers that weren't using either one. And that really was fine. You know, during regular class where you see your students every day.
Yeah.
What we learned is if we have to open remotely in the fall or have to go to remote learning at some time next year, we need those standard platforms. And so that's really where all of our training, not all of our training, that's where a significant amount of training is going this summer, so that by August, every one of our teachers is up and running with a common platform.
Which one? Can you say?
Well, we're going to use Seesaw, kindergarten through fifth grade, and Schoology, sixth through 12th grade. Part of what helps with that is Google Classroom integration into either one of them. So if you're already using Google Classroom, you don't have to abandon that. You just need to adapt it into the Seesaw or the Schoology system. We need to open next year or be ready in August with knowing that that could be part of what we do. You know, the other piece is then creating, we had just incredible pockets of excellence throughout the school district of teachers just doing just super cool, amazing things with kids. And we had places where teachers really struggled because maybe their skill set was a face-to-face skill set and their skill set wasn't with technology. So we need to build more consistency across the board. Common expectation. This is what everybody, you know, this is exactly, you know, this is the minimum you're for sure going to get in every first grade classroom if you have to go to remote learning. And I think we definitely struggled more at those primary grades than we did at our high schools. Our high school teachers were much more equipped, much more common use of those Schoology and Google Classroom tools already with kids. But at that primary level, we really have to provide more support from a curriculum standpoint for those teachers because those classrooms are just – they're built to be face-to-face with learning centers.
That's right. They're built touchy-feely.
Reading groups. They are. And so to take that and move it to a
teachers built touchy-feely in that area too. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really an interesting comment. I'm so glad you're doing this. That's really excellent you were able to accomplish this. Charlie, let me ask it from the school board point of view. Okay. The school board, of course, you're all intelligent people. You know what was going on. How did the school board react to all this? Or how? Let me ask it a broader way. How should a school board react to all this? Suddenly, your managerial team, i.e. the folks like Trent, are saying, we need to do this, 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 and this. How does a school board anywhere react to those types of things under these crazy circumstances? Charlie Wilson.
I think a great school board should react exactly as the Worthington School Board reacted, which is to be totally supportive of our administration and our teachers, as they were, as you said, building the airplane, in my opinion, while it was already in the air, not while it was on the runway. And I believe good school board members, and actually I wrote my first National School Board Association Journal article on the importance of school boards supporting their administration and their teachers. And my wife stayed socially isolated since early March, but we walk every day in our neighborhood where there are a lot of teachers, a lot of members, and a whole lot of parents and kids who are in our schools. And they've all been, first of all, very appreciative of our administration and our superintendent. And they believe a lot of learning has occurred, and I think it's going to change in many ways education, especially at the high school level. I'm 100% with Trent that at the elementary school level, that face-to-face interaction is so critical at the high school level. I'm not sure seat time is so important. I know students, high school students who live in my neighborhood who say they've learned so much more by having the freedom.
We're just going to say that.
And so I think it's been a wonderful experience. And also, teachers that I talk to say this absence of focus on standardized tests has freed them to truly take their students to a whole different level. And I just
won't get an argument from me. You won't get an argument from me on that.
Get away. This whole focus on seat time, especially at the high school level.
And, you know, I got to say something, Charlie, and I do tend to agree with you. I think everybody will be surprised about how much the kids have learned, okay? I'll say it in a funny way, in spite of what we're doing. Okay, they've all learned a lot, certainly about resilience and all that. And I think the reason they all learned a lot under these circumstances is because of the teachers they've had along the way. Okay, not necessarily one they have now, though that's important too. Okay, there's a belief that innate in them that's been fostered through 12 years or how many years within Worthington schools that there's always opportunity to learn, and they are learning. They'll do it on their own if they have to. That's a compliment, okay, to all the teachers that were at Worthington. Right, Trent?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think it's a compliment to the teachers and their investment.
Sure.
I just think it's also a compliment to this generation of kids. They really are entrepreneurial. They figure out how to do things. They might drive their parents crazy because they might want to access it on a smartphone, and that seems really challenging. Those of us that are adults, like, what are you doing? But they make it work. So,
they've had good education all along the way. So they appreciate education. Give the kids in 11th grade, give their second grade teacher kudos right now. That started in first grade in kindergarten and all that sort of thing. Trent, let me ask you something. And this is key, especially considering this last week, okay? SEL, social emotional learning, which is, I'm sure you guys are doing it, okay, and I'm sure you well understand it. But now these are Nazi times, okay? What's the word on social emotional? And I'll ask Charlie the same thing, but go ahead. Trent.
Well, social emotional learning has been a real focus over the last couple of years in Worthington schools. We did survey all of our students in their social emotional state. We use a group called Panorama to work with us and really attempted to get a feel for what were the effects of being home on our students. Obviously, we're concerned about mental health right now. I think again, this weekend's events make that even a greater priority. There's just such a level of uncertainty that creates a level of anxiety. And then there's that social isolation. And our students, they're at a major age in their life where they want to be with their peers. We're all wired that way as humans, but kids certainly during adolescence are wired more that way. So our Board of Education has made significant investments in mental health, both from a school counselor standpoint and what we call mental health specialists, social workers with mental health background in our school district. And one of the things that we just worked on this weekend is a plan for that mental health support to continue all summer and to get that out to families here shortly so they know, even though school's not in session, this is how Worthington Schools will support you through your mental health this summer and with that trusted adult that you're already working with and how we can hook you up with some of the outside agencies that we work with.
Are you using any teletherapy or anything like that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said there, Larry.
Are you using any teletherapy or anything like that?
Yeah, so I think some teletherapy, sure. That may be part of what our mental health specialist utilizes, right? Working with a student, maybe it's a one-on-one in an office hour, and again, in a socially distanced manner right now, but where that student really needs to see somebody. But it may be as much as connecting them through, teletherapy through an app like Zoom or Google Meet or the different things that people have really become used to using. So
it's so important. Charlie, SEL, and I know, I believe me, I know, Charlie, social-emotional learning. Okay, what about your school board, and what should school boards think about that, okay, in terms of the rest of the year and the coming year? SEL, social-emotional learning. Charlie.
Well, that is the critical component to what has been missing from the education reformers' obsession with test-based accountability, and that is that our schools are focused on preparing kids for life, not preparing them to take standardized tests. And I think a reason, as you mentioned and as Trent mentioned earlier, that our students and students all across America have been able to adapt and thrive on this remote learning is because of our schools were in fact preparing them for life. But the social emotional learning is important because we have children who are disadvantaged and children who look to their teacher and look to their school and look to their classmates for support for socially and emotionally. And we're all struggling right now as to how best to deal with this. I think our district already was putting a good amount of emphasis on social and emotional learning, but I hope that the events of the last few days and the last few months will even force our game to be even better in that regard, because it's about instilling that resilience you were talking about earlier, the resilience I see in my neighborhood among high school and middle school kids, adolescent kids. They miss playing pickup games with their friends, but they're adapting. And I think, as you said, a lot of that is the training they got at school.
It is. It is. Don't sell yourself short, Worthington, Ohio, and every other school district. Okay, it's because of you that this is working as well as it is working. Okay. It's really tough out there. Trent, I don't know whether I exposed something. Charlie doesn't. I'm going to tell you a secret. Charlie doesn't like standardized testing. Did you know that?
I've heard that before.
Yeah, I know he's kept. I know he's kept quiet about it for years. But now I was finally able to get it out of him. It's like the Jerry Springer show. Okay, what can I tell you? Okay,
he's impressive. Just
that's all there is.
Impressive.
Right.
I've been out of high school for 40 years now, and nobody is in my life or career has asked me to take a standardized test.
And you wouldn't have, Charlie. I know you. You wouldn't have. Okay, you would have just walked. You would have walked out, man. Okay, this is great. Hey, Trent, I wanted to tell you something. I don't know if you know. Do you know Louvelle Brown, the superintendent in Ithaca?
No, I know the name, but don't know. Go ahead.
by total coincidence, I'm doing a show with your organization, AASA, the American School Superintendent Association.
Right.
Okay, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And they're bringing Louvel on.
Okay,
and Louvel's whole thing, okay, is kindness. That's one of his major mantras, if excuse me, if I may, kindness. And I know that's all, good Lord, okay, I know that's all what you are about, okay, kindness. So I want you to listen. If you don't listen, I'm going to send you a link to the show after the show tomorrow. But it's 9 o'clock tomorrow with Louvel, and I'm going to send him this one when I'm done, okay. About how you folks are it's nice to see Ohio, New York, okay, and then how careful you are about being kind to kids, being kind to each other, and creating a culture of kindness, which in the end, especially after a week like this, is going to really pay off. You deserve kudos, my friend. And we got 4 minutes left, so take two of them and tell me how graduation go. What'd you do? 12th graders, what'd you do?
Yeah, and so graduation. So we did two things. We had a drive-through diploma pickup and picture taking. So our students were in their gowns, and they got their diplomas, and then they went to a picture station, and we were able to take pictures in their cap and gown and with their diploma and the background of the school and those types of things. And so we paid for those pictures for families, and families were able to come and take those pictures. But it was all done in a socially distanced way. And then we did film virtual graduations. And so we released those at the time of the regularly scheduled graduation. It went through with the student speakers and my speaking and our board president's talk and all of those things.
Nice.
And then our principals, what I thought was really neat was our principals actually did read the name of every student. And so a slide came up with that student's name and their picture, and this principal read the name, and that felt like an appropriate amount of time. And our hope was that families would gather together in a living room or a family room or a backyard, and cap and gown and watch that virtual graduation. Certainly wasn't what our students envisioned, but uniquely cool. So
you did great. You must know the superintendent then. I don't know him, of Tewksbury or her, of Tewksbury, Massachusetts, because my nephew is graduating tomorrow with the exact same things, the drive-by, pick up the diploma, and the picture station. And I'm sure
now,
videos.
I tried to tell our tech guy, please don't let him fast forward through my talk, but I don't think it's possible.
It's got to stop there. This operation cannot be done at this point.
That's hoping for, but I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, and you did good, okay? I know it's not what everybody wanted, but it's the best you could do, and I'm sure it worked out great, and these kids will always remember their high school graduation. Believe me, some of us have lost it over the course of time. This one's going to be really something. They will be thinking about it, and I hope laughing about it in many, many years to come to their kids. Well, when I graduate, it's going to be like this. Charlie, we're going to do more, okay? And Trent, you are always welcome here, and you'll hear from me after I'm done with Lavelia tomorrow. Is that okay?
That's great. That's great.
Okay, Trent. Great guest. Thank you, Trent.
Thank you
did good again, Charlie. I love having you on the show, Charlie.
Thank you very much. I always enjoy being on your show. You're the greatest.
Yeah, back at you, my friend. Great guests make great hosts, is all I can say. Okay, thanks to you both. Have a great day. Stay safe, please. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, Trent Bowers, Worthington, Ohio Superintendent, Dr. Trent, and Dr. Charlie Wilson, NSBA president and school board member over in Worthington, Ohio. Great show. In what was a bad week, hopefully this week will be a better one. We're going to archive education-talkradio.org. Tweet it at EduTalkRadio, and please go over and check out ace-ed.org, all about equity and access, pre-K-12, ace-ed.org. Thanks for listening.